Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Kim, let me explain how the internet works. See, it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. And those tubes are filled with the internet. And it's coming here through the air.
That's probably what's making the apartment smell like farts.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 113 for the week of April 18th, 2016. I am cozy Uptown Duck Palace David T. Cole, and I'm here with Stoop Crone Sarah D. Bunting.
I'll be in intimates.
Stress Burp Joe Reed. Secret Earth Watcher Tara Arietto.
It was glorious.
And past life geisha John Ramos.
It's not racist. It really happened.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Extra Hot Great. Joining us today is John Ramos, who's normally in Los Angeles, but today is sitting in with the in the Brooklyn studio. Hello, John.
Hello.
Yay! John. Welcome
I'm
back.
Sitting
John.
With actual people.
Well, heard of them.
Out of your bunker at last.
Looking at an actual beautiful oil painting of Beatrice Arthur, as we all should be at all moments of our lives. Anyway, we are here.
Link to it in show notes. Yeah.
We're here to talk about Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which dropped on Netflix its second season last Friday. 13 episodes again. And I'll start by saying, it tried to address some of the criticisms that the first season got in terms of being problematic, for example, in its portrayal of a Native American character played by a 100% white actor. Some of those I thought were successful. Others I did not think were so good. And for example, Titus's, I don't even know, geisha face, one man show. What did everyone else think of this? I'll start with our guest, John.
Of that issue particularly, well, I kind of addressed that up top in my intro.
Yes.
That episode, I read a blow by blow by Alan Sepinwall, in which I think he just said the less said about this episode the better.
Yeah.
That's probably true. Not just because of that, but also because anytime TV takes on the internet, it usually doesn't work.
Yes.
Not usually as bad as Aaron Sorkin, but
and don't address your critics head on. Like it's never a good look on you. Ever.
Gotta punch
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I agree.
Can't punch down.
I think it was unfortunate that they chose to make Titus the mouthpiece of that argument too, because I don't know, don't drag him into it, really, was my feeling. But
right. We all love Titus. Don't make him do that.
Yeah.
So. I thought that they, on the other side of the coin, though, some of the critiques of his character in season one were that he was too much of a cartoon, and I thought that was addressed very nicely and in a much more subtle way by actually putting him in a grown-up relationship with another man that I thought was handled with a lot of nuance. What did you guys think?
I think that actor is very charming, which helps a lot. Like, I don't know. I thought it was very winning, and I actually like missed it up a couple of times with the two
yeah,
of them.
They were sweet
together, and him like cocooning and bouncing off stuff in the kitchen and being depressed, and
yeah,
then well, it shows up and it's super cute and
yeah.
But like the internet stuff, I really was like, I sort of like that this is a world where the internet functionally doesn't exist for them, and that's where they should keep it.
Right,
I think because it's not, it doesn't end up being a good look.
You don't
as
end
Joe
up
said.
Yeah, you don't end up sort of giving a lot of insight. But I feel like Titus Burgess is an actor who I think they realized as they went along, because he was in 30 Rock for those couple of Queen of Jordan episodes, and he was funny in a very kind of niche way. But I think they discovered through the course of the first season what a strong actor he is. And I know he's like got the Broadway chops and everything like that, but I think it was, you know, the sort of pleasant surprise of that first season. And I think this season they really explored that space with him, and they let him do stuff that was still like they still have all the sort of Titusness of him. Like he's will pull a one-liner out of absolutely nowhere, and the sort of airplane levels of cramming in jokes into a square foot on this show is really, really incredible. Yeah. But then they'll have him have episodes like, not even, you know, the stuff with Mikey was great. The stuff with him and the kid who he meets on the street when the kid sees him with the old man hair and mistakes him for like an older sort of, you know, mentor figure. I thought that was a really good episode in that, like, I don't want him to have a kid. God, nobody on TV have kids. But like, I liked how that sort of explored that side of Titus, who all of a sudden realizes that, like, he craves the respect of others in a way that he hadn't really before. And I thought that was very cool.
For me, I don't know where everyone is. I saw 8 of the 13 episodes. I don't know if everyone else got to finish it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, cool. I managed to finish.
Just in context. But, I mean, on paper, I think, you know, Titus was this bit, you know, definitely way to one stereotypical end, and Mikey, they decided to bring it and make him like as opposite as possible. So on paper, it looked a little cartoonish, but the execution I thought was flawless. And both the actors were so good, and it was really touching. I mean, Mikey is just like, I don't know, I just want to hug him every time he's on screen. He's so great.
Can I advance a perhaps controversial notion that Jacqueline/Jane Krakowski is the Pierce of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
I was just about to ask whether anyone else thought that she could go.
Like, she goes away for like huge chunks of this season, as she did last season, and the show is no worse for wear for it, and possibly better. Yeah. Even though I liked some of her stuff, but
when she's in the show, her and Kimmy don't really cross very much, so you know, that's another, like, why is she there? Like, she seems to be starting her own little sideshow. And it didn't, totally the Pierce of this one. And, you know, John, you know, little spoiler for the end of the season, like the whole football thing that happens at the end was so crammed in. And
with the Redskins.
I like David Cross as a comedian, you know, for Mr. Show, not so much as stand up, but he is not good in this series. He's not a great actor, and I don't really understand the dynamic between those two at any point in their relationship. Yeah. When they're at, you know, at odds, when they're being dismissive of each other, when they're apparently getting closer, it all read the same to me. And there was like just a really weird kind of blahness to that whole relationship. And again, it happens in a silo from everything else, and it didn't really seem worthy of the rest of the show.
Well, and the Lillian stuff happens in a little bit of a silo too, but I feel like it thematically, or not even thematically, because I guess Jacqueline is sort of like, she's finding herself like Kimmy is finding herself, but I think the Lillian stuff seems to fit with the tone of the rest of the show a little bit better. And I just think Carol Kane's funnier in the role, and like that they do more sort of goofy things with her that I like.
I think certainly that's
carries
true.
I'm sorry. I was going to say she certainly carries the solo effort better. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I find Carol Kane so charming, and not just because her wardrobe in this role is like my actual wardrobe. And like, I spotted a couple of my pairs of earrings. Like, there's a reason I'm the stoop crow on it.
Every time she calls the apartment a tugboat.
Yes.
And then like she's the always in intimates. And I'm like, there's something so Catskillsy and wonderful that it's like challenging you to figure out that it's Catskillsy.
Well, and that she started to yell "Run, Lillian" at herself is maybe my favorite recurring joke.
Oh my god, I love
it.
But my issue with the Jacqueline stuff, I think, and usually I'm not a big Krakowski fan because I feel like she's always doing the same thing, which is fine.
Yeah.
But this, like, the writing for her just seems really cheap. Like the whatever, the drugs for the kid.
Oh
subplot.
Yeah, I feel like we've seen that on other shows, right?
Yeah.
The Simpsons did 20 years ago.
Today's a good day for Simpsons did it, by the way. Speaking of the Johnny Depp, Amber Heard getting a booting in Australia apology. Like, that was great.
And there was a rich guy money fight on Bob's Burgers
last night.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Man. Like the animation was almost the same too.
That's funny.
Yeah. Anyway.
Why reinvent the wheel? But yeah, it's just like, like parents of you know, like New York parents are neurotic and weird, and especially Upper East Side rich parents. And like, I have a degree in political science from Princeton. Like, it's literally always from Princeton and political science.
Right.
And they're also not allowed to say the words Woodrow and Wilson together anymore. Anna Pine. That was her, right?
Anna Camp.
Anna Camp.
Yeah. Camp.
Yeah.
Why do I keep saying Anna Pine?
I don't know.
camp Pine.
I liked her and I liked Sedaris, both of them, but I feel like that's like maybe even a different show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a show that I feel like we've seen. And sometimes there's like a version of this on whatever Law and Order that isn't supposed to be satirical, but it's still satirical. Right. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Haha. Like the 10022 is.
I'm
the
not
garden
the,
of anorexic
I'm not the
terrors. We got
come
it.
To for a negative opinion of Krakowski. I could watch her read the phone book. That's just my thing. But I don't necessarily disagree about some of the writing. But if we're going to advance off-brand opinions, and I don't know how everyone else feels about this, but if Dong is gone at the end of 8, I am glad. I do not like that subplot at all. I don't think it work. I think those actors work well together.
I think I like it better than most, but I think I would still be probably okay just because it feels like they've gotten to the point where it feels effortful. Although I liked the thing at the beginning of the season where he took more English classes to speak like the Kardashians, and he would sort of throw in a stray line every once in a while. I thought that was funny, but it does feel like, again, it goes back to that addressing our critics thing that I don't feel like it behooves the show to do that at all.
Well, and
or
that
maybe
whole
they
thing,
just wrote it so they can't continue it, and that's okay. Sometimes that happens.
Sure, right? Yeah.
But
yeah.
And the whole thing with his legal wife, like I see what they're trying to do, but I did feel like it crossed a line into like creepy elder abuse that isn't funny.
Right.
Like she's not well, and it wasn't like not in that sort of Daffy way. But
right. If we want to make fun of Hoarders, we'll watch Hoarders.
Yeah.
If we want to make fun of Objectum Sexuals, we'll watch that British special again.
Sure,
for the
will
15th
we?
Time.
Hey, John, you said you're on episode 8, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah.
For me, for season 2, I was like, okay, you know, it's still funny, but it didn't really grab me like it did in season 1. That might have been part sort of like character discovery. But with episode 9, I was like, bought into the second season. So in episode 19, DeFay comes in with her character, but also there's this running joke with this, I forget what it's called. It's like, now that's what I almost call music or something like
now that.
That.
Oh my
God,
like music.
So good.
Yeah. Which is this like running gag. It's like music that's sort of like what you remember, but it's not quite there. So fucking funny. And Tina Fey's character is really great without being like too, limelight grabby, you know, like
I agree. I think the back half of the season is so much stronger than the first, yep. Which is why it's baffling that they only made the first 6 episodes available to critics ahead, because it's like, just do the whole season. That's your best, like that's your best foot forward.
Yeah.
I feel like they could have started the season there and then built another few episodes at the end of it. You know, that would have been a good place to go. Because, I mean, maybe. You know, the arc of the season is Kimmy sort of coming to terms with her, you know, bearing her feelings and everything, and just dealing with it all. And that kind of starts in earnest with that episode. And, you know, it comes to a
they hinted at him as Sam Page, which thank you for finally giving him a role that I don't have to think of him as Greg from Mad Men.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, anything where I don't have to think about him raping Joan, yeah, I'm good with that, because he's real cute. But yeah, I feel like that's, and the latter episodes, once they start dealing with Kimmy's trauma, the stuff in the earlier episodes starts to feel like more intentional and more like they had a plan all along, which is good.
You guys, I can't believe we're this far into this discussion and we haven't gotten to the dance routine to Forever Your Girl. Like,
oh my God.
I thought that would have been Joe's lead.
Like, so much has happened since then. But yeah, like, I mean, Amtrak is for lovers, and we think we can all agree with that. That whole thing was so funny. That's the thing, is the show will just like, they work at such a high volume. Like, it's so hard for me when they release a whole season at once and everybody on your Twitter feed is at different points and they're referencing different jokes without attribution, and it all comes so fast. I'm like, I know that, but why do I know that? Like, I have no time. I got to watch another episode.
Yeah, you got to be it's Neo in the Matrix of comedy or something. You know, you got to see the code.
Yeah, you got to see the whole board. Yeah, exactly.
You're right. There's so much, and you pull out like what you can remember. But
yeah,
for me, another highlight was Dean Winters as the voice of Bunny.
Oh my God! And then who was Kitty?
Will
I looked
Arnett.
This up, and now
Will Arnett. Arnett.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I was disappointed that we heard about the Reverend's alter ego, whatever, Little Lisa something, that would dress up like a girl and hang out in the bunker to find out what people were saying about the Reverend, and then we didn't get to see it. We better get to see it in season 3 is all I have to say about that.
I feel like other critics were like, well, that's not funny. We've seen this like exact bust on Scientology before, I'm like, I don't care.
No, I feel like there's still much thought it was funny. Every time they revisit the other girls is funny. I was sort of disappointed that we only got an audio version of the new song from Daddy's Boy, because maybe that's just something we can get, one new song every season, because that's the gift that keeps on giving for me.
I really like the episode where Gretchen came back, though, and she went off the chain, and then Kim joined a cult. That was like, that was really unexpected and smart and super fun, I thought.
Yeah.
It made me care about Gretchen, which I...
When she's just walking down the street and she spots the cop's gun, it's such a good gag.
Yeah. Any theories as to why this, containing as many Buntonite things as it does? It's a sitcom. It contains Frickowski. There's a lot of singing. Why do I like this? Discuss.
I don't know. Every time you say that you do, I'm shocked anew. Like, I have no idea why this one.
She still thinks that I'm punking her, that I'm like, oh, let's do Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt as the topic next week. Tara's like, fuck off. Really?
Not
what are we
falling
doing
for it this time?
Maybe, you know, and to Joe's point, maybe the jokes are at such a high volume that it doesn't give you time to think about all the reasons why you classically hate sitcoms.
Well, and it's not a classical sitcom. I mean, it has the trappings, but it's so weird.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, it's very absurdist.
It's like, and I didn't think that you would.
Like, even in the way that, even in the ways that don't work or like have been mined to death and should be left alone, like the Upper East Side Neuroses stuff.
Yeah.
It's still like, it's definitely where it says it is.
Well, and it's very defiantly like, you're gonna get this if you're from New York or you won't, and like, there's, it's okay because there's a whole like backhoe full of jokes coming down the pike, so like, that's fine. But like, they'll throw in a joke about like the Second Avenue subway line that's never coming, you
well
know
and
I mean?
Then
it's
it was
like,
so
that's good stuff.
This is what I love about her character too, is that there's like a song playing and then she sees the sign for it and she like kisses her hand and presses it onto the sign, and it was like, oh, like, yeah, that is sort of our relationship with New York. Like, it's love, hate, mostly hate, but then there are these little moments like that. And
I also
think the show is like really strives to be current, though. Like, a lot of sitcoms will like just now be making jokes about like Twitter, you know. It's very up to the, it tries to be very up
yeah
to
it
the
is its references are
some
very...
of them may not age well, at least like in the moment. They're, you know, they didn't go for the laziest option for sure.
Yeah,
but also like, even if the jokes are have been done before, when Kimmy is delivering them, because she is basically an alien, that it
right
adds that dimension to it. And I think it's sort of like this weird, like, you know, you're along with the discovery ride with her. So like, even the jokes that are familiar get like that little spin that makes them work again.
Yeah.
I watched the opening shot where she gets out of the bunker. It just has like this huge smile on her face, like every time. Like, I will not skip over that. I just get pleasure out of it every time. She's so like sunny and open. And
I also love the song.
Yeah. It's a really good song. Yeah.
I mean, I think it actually might be terrible, but I don't care.
Psst, Liv.
Yes, Mom.
We're about to watch the very last episode, Face Off. Who do you think's going to win?
I think Walter.
Let's find out. Hey, Livy.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching season 10, episode 14, which was the finale of Face Off.
Finale!
Can you describe the challenge for the past 2 weeks?
So, they had directors and they had to recreate the characters for their own version of Hell Hall.
And what characters did the artists do?
They made demons and the person or the animal that the demon attacks.
That's right. Now, which was your favorite movie between Melissa, Rob, and Walter?
I like Walter's, because the gourd pumpkin guy, that was funny, like how he jumps up. We all thought, oh, I'm nice, don't be scared.
Yes, because the movies were kind of creepy, we decided to make them silly so that you wouldn't be afraid of them.
So he jumped up and said, hi, I'm Joel. My cousin's on vacation in the Bahamas.
I love Christmas.
Because I like getting presents from my cousins that's right now in the Bahamas searching a leaf for my present.
I really like bunny rabbits.
So that's how we made it silly, so you wouldn't be scared. Who is the winner of this season of Face Off? Rob. And do you think he deserved it?
Yes.
Why?
He accomplished many great challenges in the past, so for the fact that this wasn't his best, I don't mind.
You know, it's kind of weird.
What?
He was in grade 8 when you were born. He's not that much older than you.
He was in grade 8 when I was born?
Weird, huh? How do you feel about this season? Was it a good season?
Yes.
And you're happy with the results?
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much, Liv, for all the work that you do, and we'll see how it goes for next season.
Well, we'll see you then, if I come back.
Bum, bum, bum!
Cliffhanger.
Someone's playing hardball. Yeah.
Contract time.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, that music really brings me back to a certain time in my life. Do you guys happen to know what time it is?
Oh, shit.
It's game time to die. Oh, it's the very first Blotter Presents Game Time to Die, you guys. Are you ready?
Oh, my. Yes. I hope so.
I'm ready.
Here's how it's going to work. The winner will receive 10 Buncey points, also known as Boints. Boints may be redeemed for Harbor Sweets candy. Harbor Sweets candy so delicious it should be against the maritime law. Note, not an official sponsor. Here is how the game works. I have a list here of show names. When I read you the name of the show, you must tell me whether it is a real Investigation Discovery Channel show or fake.
Oh my God.
So, for example, when I say Momsters, when moms go bad.
True.
Anyone?
Real.
Real?
It is real.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Okay.
There will be 1 point for each correct answer. There will be no hints. We will play 4 quick rounds. In the event of a tie after 4 rounds, we will go to Spelling Bee style tiebreaker rules.
Oh, my.
Please note, while it is possible to do a trick game time with all real shows, I did not do that. There are fakes in here. Are there any questions?
What is our order?
Picky. Hit it.
We will start with Tara. Ooh.
So then I choose the rest.
We'll start with Tara. From there, we'll move on to Joan, followed by Dove Kale, and then Ja Rule. So that's Tara, John, Dave, and Joe. Is someone scoring this? Because I think we all learned in the Law and Order draft that I can't do two things at once.
Yeah, I'll
I will score.
Thank you. Okay, it is Game Time to Die, Volume 1. Tara, Contract with Death.
Fake.
Contract with Death.
Fake.
It is fake. Hold on. Moving on to John. Bloody Marys. Bloody Marys.
Real.
That is real.
Please tell me it's about gay serial killers.
I think it's just about Marys.
Okay.
It didn't specify.
Okay.
Dave, do not disturb, colon, hotel horrors. Do not disturb, colon, hotel horrors.
I'm going to say fake.
That one is real.
God damn it.
And Joe.
Yes.
Web of Lies. Web of Lies.
True. Real.
That is real.
Okay.
Nice.
Round 2. Tara. Yeah. So glad you got this one. Thank you, Picky. My Strange Criminal Addiction.
My Strange
Criminal Addiction.
I'm going to say fake.
That one's real.
Oh.
Ouch.
John. Suspicion. Suspicion.
Just once, right?
It's not once. Suspicion, suspicion, like
suspicion, cold.
Suspicion, suspicion, cold. The Broadway musical.
I'm gonna say fake.
That one is real.
Oh.
Who is up next? Dave. Nightmare Nannies.
True.
Nightmare Nannies.
Real.
Fake.
Oh, it sounds so real.
Where are we, Joe?
Yes.
Sinister Ministers. Sinister Ministers.
That sounds too good to be true. I'm going to say it's fake.
It's true.
That one is real.
Oh.
How do you know that?
Beginning of round 3.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Young, hot, and crooked, Tara.
Real.
Young, hot, and crooked.
I'm going to say real.
That is real.
Yeah.
Moving on to John. Red rum. Real.
What?
Wow.
I didn't hear his answer. Did he get it right?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Red Rum's real.
Okay.
Dave.
Yeah.
Elder Skelter.
Elder Skelter?
Elder.
Elder Skelter. Oh, man. I've got one right so far. False.
That was... Joe.
Yes.
Fear thy neighbor. Fear thy neighbor.
That's got to be real.
That is real.
Okay.
All right, beginning our last round.
Three-way tie.
Really? No. Oh. Well, here we go.
Who's, sorry, hey, wait a second.
Tara.
Wait. Who's in last place?
Elijah?
So that is what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Tara, Deadly Sons. Deadly Sons.
Real?
Fake. John. Oh, picky. This is great. Final Cut. Final Cut.
Story about the horror of editing jobs gone wrong.
No, it's Killer Moyles.
I can say real.
Oh, yes, that is real. Dave.
True.
Teenage Heist.
True.
Teenage Bank Heist.
Real.
No, that is fake.
Oh.
It was a Lifetime movie.
Poor Dave.
Zero for four.
And rep, Joe, Sex Sent Me to the Slammer.
Real.
That is real.
All right.
You do have a tie, John and Joe.
Okay. So, John, I guess whoever gets it wrong first, or, you know how to spell it.
Spelling me.
Okay. John, how not to kill your husband. How, parentheses, all caps, not
to kill your husband.
Real.
That is real. Joe.
Yes.
Poisoned Passions. Poisoned Passions.
Fake.
That is real.
Ah!
John.
Well done, John.
Yes.
Valued guest.
Valued guest.
Woo!
The next one was Death from Above. Would anyone like to guess whether that is real or fake?
Real.
Real.
Fake.
Damn!
It's tough, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice game. Good job, Sarah.
Keep humoring me. Let's go around the dial.
Let's do go around the dial. Tara is our first stop.
This weekend was the premiere of Confirmation, which is HBO's original dramatization of the confirmation hearings of Clarence Thomas. The 90s reenactments of real crimes are having a real moment right now. This is a fun companion piece in a way, not really fun. It's also about a horrible injustice, but to American Crime Story, which descended, of course, on FX. It's really riveting and great. In fact, I think American Crime Story has kind of spoiled me because this is just over 2 hours long, but I wished it was like a 10-part blow-by-blow of every single thing that happened because it felt like... Did anyone else watch it?
I recorded it, but I haven't watched it yet.
Okay.
Yeah,
same.
First of all, literally every person is in this movie. Like, everyone is in it. You're watching the credits. You're like, Jeffrey Wright? What? Like, people that you did not even hear about having been in it are in it.
Wow.
Everyone is amazing, of course. Kerry Washington, who I haven't really seen in much stuff since I stopped watching Scandal, is incredible as Anita Hill. You sort of forget that she's actually a really good actor and she can do more than say a lot of dialogue really fast and be angry, because she's mostly just so like quiet and still in this part. You really feel like she only speaks when she absolutely has to, and every word is just being dragged out of her, but she's amazing. Wendell Pierce has a smaller role playing Clarence Thomas. Joe, Allison Wright plays his wife. Mrs. Erotic American is Mrs. Clarence Thomas.
Oh, nice. Amazing. Mrs. Erotic American.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's amazing. It's like there's a lot of stuff in there about the story that I didn't know. Oh, God. Greg Kinnear is my boyfriend, Joe Biden. And even though he doesn't look that much like him, he sounds eerily like him. It's crazy. You close your eyes and you would think he's Joe Biden. Like, it's a tour de force of Bidenry, so it's worth watching for that reason alone. But all of the backroom deals and how crooked it all is and how gross a story it was. It's just, it's great. I mean, HBO does these movies wonderfully. And though the past few political ones have all been written by Danny Strong, the co-executive producer of Empire, this one was written by Susanna Grant, who wrote Aaron Brockovich and In Her Shoes, yeah, and a lot of other movies of that sort. So recommend it. It'll be on HBO Go, and I strongly advise you to watch it. And my plug is for a video on our site, previously.tv. It is a video that frequent guest of this show and host of the Making the Sausage podcast, our sister podcast, Nick Reinwald Jones, made a supercut. It's Game of Thrones season 5 with farts. This joins a proud tradition. He's also done several Downton Abbey with farts videos. So this one is great. It's a perfect way to get hyped for the season premiere, which is this Sunday. It's definitely the fartiest Game of Thrones content you will see on the internet. So I advise you to check it out. We'll link it in the show notes.
John.
I'm here to talk about iZombie. The finale was amazing. It blew up a ton of plot lines, some literally, and built a new world on top of them. The show has always been kind of as the cure turns to some degree, in that they use the potential zombie cure as a source of driving the plot a lot. But I think they're smart about it, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen with the new world order a certain group is looking to build, and which side of it Liv and company are going to come down on, especially since now everyone of consequence is in on the zombie joke. My esteemed colleague and great friend Nick Reinwald Jones was on a few weeks ago saying that he thought the second season was a letdown. I respectfully but comprehensively disagree, as I think it's done more with this fairly modest premise than I could have imagined. And in a year of TV in which I quit shows mid-episode to a Tara-like degree,
wow,
this show has made me really excited to keep going with it. I am still covering The Flash and Legends of Tomorrow and Nashville in particle format through this season, but I would really like to plug my new show, Fact Sheet, for The Wine Show, because everyone needs that in their life, especially Matthew Good and Matthew Reese.
Joe Reed.
So The Outs is one of my favorite web series, and I really got to thinking it was never going to come back for another season, but it has. It is now available on Vimeo if you pay a modest fee per episode. It's a if you remember at all, the first season of The Outs was about 3-ish years ago, maybe longer than that. It's a show about the first season was about a gay relationship that had ended just in the first episode. And so the first season was about sort of the fallout of that and how these two guys sort of put themselves back together again. And it's very sort of funny and touching and kind of acerbic and really good. Adam Goldman is the brains behind it, showrunner, writer, star of it. And it's really good. It's weird. It's sort of this season, especially the second season, looks so good for a web series, like so good for a, you know, a TV show in general. But like, it's amazing the kind of production design they have on the show for a web series. So if you go to Vimeo, it's I think you can buy the whole season right at a start. They've released 3 episodes so far of the 6 that they're going to. I'm really happy to have it back. Hopefully, if they do well enough, they can keep making more of it, because it's a really good show. I really like it. For my plug, Decider.com, last week I wrote an explainer of the Lisa Vanderpump, Yolanda Foster tiff on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills that has proven to be somewhat illuminating for people who've watched the season and didn't know what the hell was going on. Also, I've been doing Today in TV History. Over the weekend, I got to write about the PTA Disbands episode of The Simpsons, which, if you've been listening to this podcast since way in the beginning, was a very early canon entry for me, including my very favorite joke of all time on The Simpsons, when that poor little girl is left hanging on the parallel rings and calling for Mrs. Pommelhorse. I'd like to get down now. So great moments in TV history abound if you check out Decider.com.
Sarah.
I am here to talk about 60 Days In, which is the LMN / A&E, we're going to send 7 civilians to jail to fix the system show. It airs Thursday nights at 10 o'clock, and then a million times after that all week. It started out as sort of interesting. Like, it's the kind of bonkers premise that you're like, I can't believe this is even legal for them to do. So sure, I'll watch it. But as the season wears on, it is seeming increasingly ersatz, even for a show like this, where you imagine they have a ton of controls just for safety's sake. Timelines are getting not even fudged, like a whole tray of fudged, I guess. Exceptions are being made in the hard and fast. Nobody knows they're not real inmates. We can't pull anyone out of the court transfer list, rules they have been repeating every 2 minutes all year. Some people get contact visits and some don't. Some real inmates get punished for clocking the doughy upside the head. Some don't. It's completely fine to make exceptions for the civilians inside, again, for safety's sake. I'm not asking for someone to get shivved so that it feels real. But whenever the captain is talking about the program getting compromised, I kind of have to roll my eyes because the program is a television show on the same network as Duck Dynasty. So how are we supposed to care about the integrity of this quote unquote experiment if the production keeps changing the rules and not admitting to it is my question. But yes, I will keep watching it and I cover it at previously.tv. My plug is also for something that I do at previously.tv called Let's Go to the Videotape, in which I dredge the very bottom of Lake Internet for vintage TV items. This week coming up, we have George Clooney's appearance on Murder, She Wrote, and a certain notorious set of TV twins that both appeared at different times on a certain vintage 80s TV show starring Johnny Depp. You should really check it out. It goes up at around lunchtime each day. It's called Let's Go to the Videotape. And I look forward to discussing these horrors slash delights with all of you.
I tracked down an earworm from my childhood. It might not mean much to many of you, but for me, I don't know why it stuck in my head. Years later, I could do the whole commercial. This is it.
Ready to serve, Quaker oatmeal comes in flavors so good that you know what we're going to do, Timmy?
What?
We're gonna make a
hot cereal lover round again.
Out of me?
Out of him?
With apples and cinnamon.
Apples and cinnamon?
Raisins and spice.
Raisins?
Maple and brown sugar. And everything nice. We're gonna make a hot cereal lover round of you. With raisins, sir. Quaker oatmeal.
You did it.
I guarantee you want to punch that kid in the face 20 times after you watch this special.
Before we continue, I have to say two things. One, I'm sorry that everyone else on this episode did not get to watch Dave's lip sync for his life to that commercial because it was flawless. Also, I am an oatmeal eater. I am a hot cereal lover. And I cannot buy any oatmeal in any form with Dave present without him singing basically that entire commercial. Yeah. So thanks, Quaker, you dicks.
That's true.
We used to get the Quaker instant oatmeal when we were kids, and we would every once in a while, my mom would buy the assortment box where you would get like the apples and cinnamon and the maple and brown sugar all in the same box. Mm-hmm. But then they would also always have the two envelopes of plain.
Yeah, why?
And those would just sit in our cupboard for decades.
Yeah, they
would. It was
would.
Just like nobody touched them. No, Who wants to have plain oatmeal when you could have like delicious apples and cinnamon?
They're
like,
still
come on
there.
Now.
They're still at your parents'
house. Yes, they are. Sure.
They literally are at my parents' house.
They're there with like the jar of Karo syrup and like 16 cans of cream of mushroom.
Yep. Yeah.
The butt end of some frosting.
Yeah, exactly.
I know exactly the assortment that you mean because when I became an adult and started buying groceries for the family, because as soon as their debit card technology and I had a driver's license were both the case, my parents were like, you're doing the grocery shopping now, which was fine. But that was when I discovered, oh my God, you can buy a box of only maple and brown sugar. Why is anyone buying the assortment? Like, just pick the one you like the best. God, Quaker.
For my plug, this is a little bit different, but yes. I started doing derby practice, roller derby practice with the team out here.
Oh. You should explain, in Hawaii, the roller derby is co-ed for exhibition purposes and for practices and stuff, but you can't play in regulation bouts, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think that's just Hawaii.
Okay.
Okay. Well, maybe it is. I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyways, so I have to pick a derby name eventually. And I've been having, you know, some success coming up with something. So here's what I generally want. Here's the elements it can have. Something to do with Canada, something to do with photography, and of course, something to do with hurting people, right? So some combination of those would be great. Leading contender so far, somebody in town suggested cannonball with one N, because that's what I shoot with, Canon cameras, yeah. Which I thought was pretty good. Omar Gallega, put in a poutine on the hits. I thought that was pretty good.
Winner.
That was pretty good. Tara, what were the other ones?
Well, here's the ones that I came up with that Dave rejected. Ice pick, like with no K, because Canada and pictures and hurting people. When Dave said he wanted to do photography things, I tried Lenzard Cohen, but that did not go over.
Yeah.
But the one that... Tofurky.
Say that again.
Jive Tofurky.
That's pretty good. Pam suggested Slay Cheese, which I like.
Yeah, that was good.
God, what was the other one?
Photo Finisher.
Yeah, that's
good. Yeah, that was good.
Shutter Speed was another one that I suggested, but it's not as hurt.
All right, so anyway, so if you have any suggestions for me, if you could pass on my way, that would be great, either in the comments for this show, or I am technically still on Twitter, so you can @replyme and I will see it. Or on Facebook. I'm Clark on Facebook. Let me know what you think. And if I use yours, I will give you something. Who knows what?
Derby is like
F-stop?
The last... Someone did say F-stop, I think. Someone suggested
F-stop, F-stomp,
that.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Anyway, Derby naming is like the last place on earth where it's not horribly embarrassing to be punny, so let yourself go wild. Yeah.
Wait. All right, everybody, it is time for the canon. John Ramos, take it away.
Okay. So before we start, I want to set the table a little bit and call back a question that Tara posed on a recent episode. She wondered if any regular guests in the EHT rotation had a perfect submission record to the canon.
Uh-oh.
I only bring it up since the question was asked, but including one no-neck, I am yet to be defeated.
Oh, boy.
However, survived many split decisions, and I believe in all of those, my dissenting vote was one Mr. Dave Cole. This is no judgment on Dave, but more a reflection that my submissions often, shall we say, don't have much popularity in Dave's home state of New Davica. And I have to say that today, I don't think today's submission is going to be an exception there.
For the record, John, my home state is Minifornia.
Minifornia.
Duly noted.
Oh, memories.
Against that handicap, Sarah, Joe, and I jointly recapped the season for Television Without Pity back in the summer of 2007 and had a grand old time doing it. And I believe Tara watched and enjoyed the show as well. So I was curious to see if our fondness for it held up after almost a decade. I debated with myself a bit as to which episode to pick. For example, I considered the Game Night episode, but dismissed it out of trigger warning concerns among this crowd.
Did you say yet that it's brothers and sisters? I think you've skipped over that part.
No, I'm going into
it. Oh, okay, sorry. So
after due deliberation, I'm submitting my favorite of these season one episodes that I recapped, Brothers and Sisters, season one, episode 13, Something Ida This Way Comes. So we start with a birthday party that for viewers new to television will seem completely on the up and up. Nora's disappointed in doing a bad job of no, it's fining the family, while everyone is hamming up their roles and getting Nora to believe this is her real 60th birthday party. The beauty being that they know she's self-involved and sufficiently wrapped up in her guilt-mongering that she won't even notice how obvious they're being. Cut to a family meeting that includes Saul's Argyle socks and a revelation that Kevin dated a flying monkey from the West Coast production of Wicked. And we learn that the planning for Nora's real party, a surprise for the moment, is in full swing. Tons of wine is on its way, the party supplies are under control, and Justin is getting a furlough from rehab. Even if this weren't a TV show, a precocious 5-year-old could come up with a couple potential disaster scenarios, but the Walker attitude is apparently what could go wrong. Well, not much for Kevin at the moment, as he's basking in Jason Lewis's, or here Chad's, afterglow.
Bam.
However, Chad, the closeted actor, is very worried about his career, leading to Kevin's relationship boner sadly drooping in clip one.
I just gotta get a good night's sleep, that's all. I have a big scene tomorrow. My father's old mafia boss is trying to kill me with a poison latte.
Wow, I hope you live.
I do. My girlfriend Krista drinks it instead.
Oh, she's the nurse with a huge breast, right?
I thought you never watched the show, Mr. Snob.
I just started T-boning it.
You did? So,
what do you think? I think you're great. My sister Sarah's been filling me out on who's who. She used to watch it all the time when she was pregnant. She can't get over the fact we're hanging out.
You told your sister about us?
Yeah, just that we're friends. It's fine. Don't worry. It's fine.
It's just, we gotta be careful, dude. This is career suicide for me. You understand, right?
Yeah, of course. You know, you're a TV heartthrob with a girlfriend. Come on. It'd be stupid for me to think that this is... you know, anything more than what it is. It's fine.
Chad tries to mollify Kevin by telling he's never hooked up with a guy more than once prior to Kevin, but the damage is done. Kevin's sad. Meanwhile, Sarah's recording a video message to Nora, and I remember specifically when I recap this being very impressed with Rachel Griffith's ability to make Sarah sound simultaneously stilted and rushed. And I stand by that now. But you know what will loosen her up? Some couch sex. A risky move, but don't worry, Joe totally changed out the tape. And also, dear listener who has never watched television before, she definitely won't be catching her son's stomach flu. The next morning, by the telephone, Nora assures an unseen and unheard friend that the party is totally what she wanted when she opens the door to find her mother, Ida, played by Marion Ross. And I have her name in all caps in my notes. I love specifically when actresses from my childhood who played nice mothers show up in much less likable roles later in life. See also Debbie Reynolds on Will and Grace. Ida is so brassy that you can see her turning purple as she ruins the surprise money and party in 5 seconds flat and manages to make Nora guilty about the same, while Sally Field demonstrates how very good she is at a what-is-even-happening phase. Shortly thereafter, with the fakest of fake smiles, which is saying a lot, and assurances that everything is fine, Nora pulls her brother Saul into the pantry for clip two.
I told you I did not want a big to-do.
Are you crazy, Nora? It's your 60th birthday. Did you think we really wouldn't have stopped at coconut cake?
I certainly didn't think you would invite our mother to a surprise party, which I was very clear about not wanting in the first place.
Not that clear. I mean, if I thought that she was actually going to come...
Well, of course she would come. You invited her.
I did not invite her. She's here because she loves you.
No, don't. She never even came to my husband's funeral. What kind of mother is that?
Just calm down.
I'm calm.
All right, let's go.
All right, fine.
Come on.
Dips in the sound level there reflect hilarious cuts to Ida obliviously or unperturbedly looking around as her kids fight. And then when Nora and Saul emerge, Ida gets in a dig about all the cooking tools Nora has, adding that, and I quote, "It's not cooking when you use all this stuff, it's cheating." Once the daughters and the TV audience release the stress balls in their hands, we cut to Sarah looking green and soon barfing. She then tries to delegate some responsibility to a panicked Kevin, while Kitty is not having any luck trying to find a last-minute caterer. And the stress of it may be the explanation for a horrible, horrible split ends, if any explanation will suffice, which I doubt. But Robert, played by Rob Lowe, as Kitty's Republican light senator boss, and in what might have been the first of his consecutive middle-aged dreamboat roles, swoops in and offers his catering staff. He gets an invitation to the party out of it, which is a better deal for the party than him, if you ask me. At the rehab center, the needle scratching continues apace as Tommy finds out that he's directly responsible for Justin and he's not to allow him to be around drugs or alcohol. Upon hearing this news, Tommy snaps his neck around like the She-Mantis in Sarah's favorite episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And then Kevin walks in the house to find the medieval times knockoff being set up instead of the, quote, mid-level package Sarah intended to order. Kevin then gets a call about the footage for the video tribute, but he's too distracted to pay it any mind. What with the alcohol news and the invasion of McAllister's security details, which, while ignoring to Kevin on general McAllister principles, at least gives him a momentary respite to check out hot guys in uniform. Returning from the theater, Nora hilariously gives away that she knows about the party from her primping at the door, but the real laugh is when her fake surprise gives way to the real McCoy when she spies the coat of arms hanging on the wall. Before attagirlingly leering at Rob Lowe and then half-rightedly telling Kevin he's so handsome and haven't found the right girl yet, Ida sends Kevin on an upstairs secret wine errand, and he's not the only one getting surreptitious alcohol as Nora drags Saul into the pantry and literally cleans up the shelves to retrieve a couple of airplane bottles of booze as Saul tries to calm her down. There's a political discussion in the kitchen. Kevin flies off the handle at Robert until Kitty drags him away, and upstairs we have clip three.
The one contribution you made to this party is to bring Senator Homophobe.
Kevin, I really thought that you and I were done with this.
Oh, God, you missed the point. Okay. It is one thing to go and work for the guy, which I have finally come around to, but to bring him to our house, to my mother's birthday party?
He gave us his chef. It was the nice thing to do. Oh, you know what? You have no room to talk. What, sleeping with a closeted actor?
Who told you?
Tommy did.
I never said a word. You're the one blabbing to the entire family. Okay, whatever. Look, where did you hide the wine? I need to get Grandma a drink. It's ASAP.
It's in the closet.
You put the wine in my closet? Is your little boyfriend in there?
He's not my boyfriend!
The joke's not that funny. Kitty's pleased with herself reaction is... Then downstairs, the sex video is shown, which we all knew was coming. Sarah enters, then enters in a belted trench coat like she's about to continue with the live show.
Oh, God.
The only serious scene follows, in which Tyler, Justin's ex, finds out that he was recalled to the army on the day that she found him drugged out with another woman. It's tough stuff and well acted, so what will clear our palates? Bad puns about closet drinkers, as Kitty and Robert have repaired to her walk-in for some wine. Kitty asks why he doesn't tell Kevin he has a gay brother. And to that I say, yes, Robert, why don't you tell everyone that your gay brother looks like Eric Winter, because that information is incredibly pertinent. Kitty says she can't with him because she's on a man fast. Then downstairs, it's time for all the shit to hit the fan. After a couple preliminaries, we go into clip four.
Mother, Justin is in a rehab program. He's a drug addict.
Oh, Mom, a little more discretion. We are in the presence of a U.S. senator.
That's nothing to be embarrassed of.
Oh, but homosexuality is...
Oh, Kevin, you know, please, enough. Can you just please tell him that you have a gay brother, too?
Who's gay?
I think you just added two brothers for the price of one.
Thanks, Kevin. That would be me, Grandma. I'm gay.
Oh, you're not gay. Justin, maybe, but you.
I am gay. I swear, I am.
Oh, Mother, stop acting so horrified. You are loving every second of this.
Pietro, do that. Pick up the...
Why is everybody in the kitchen?
Huh? Is everything okay?
Well, hardly. Justin is an addict. Kevin is gay. And this one is shooting pornographic movies.
Pornographic what?
The sex tape that you and Jill shot, it ended up on my video.
No,
yes, it did.
Yeah. No, it didn't.
Yes, it did.
Joe? Joe? Why didn't you tell me about the tape?
I was going to, but I'll wait till after the party. I just didn't have a reason.
We're supposed to be a team.
Oh, we were a team.
It's not funny!
From here, Nora takes great delight in telling Ida that William cheated on her and was also an embezzler. Saul informs Ida that she's leaving and tells him he's sorry he invited her. Then Kitty's closet now contains all her siblings in clip five.
That was some serious family drama.
I think you finally drove off McAllister and his band of merry men.
Good. I'm sure Kitty's apologizing for Saul right now.
Oh, whatever. At least your asses weren't plastered all over a plasma. Don't laugh. It's not funny. I can't even look at you people anymore.
Imagine how we feel.
Yeah.
Bold choice with the couch.
Oh, stop it.
Have you been doing yoga?
Okay, that's enough.
Meanwhile, can we talk about Grandma? I know. I mean, you know, she's nice to us, but I forget. With Mom, she's Joan Crawford.
Can you imagine having that as your parent?
You gotta hand it to her. I mean, she turned out pretty well, considering.
Yeah.
To Mom.
To Mom.
Justin.
Wow. And I'm the one in rehab.
Where the hell have you been?
Not in drinking, unlike you drunk bastards.
Oh, come in, shut the door.
It's like a speakeasy in here. We're just getting wasted. Relax, I'm not gonna ground you.
So, how'd it go with Tyler?
Just great. She's seeing someone already.
Mm. Tyler!
You suck.
The bro-y toast and the you suck are so brotherly. I love them so much. At the end, Nora tentatively makes up with Ida. They have some real talk about their husbands. Nora realizes that Ida may have had her best interests at heart. And while the whole scene may be a little too pat, the reasons that they give for their past actions ring true. Ida gives Nora a framed photo of her as a baby and tells her she always used to brag how pretty she was, like a Sears Roebuck doll, which is so cute. One of those mother-daughter moments that punches you in the gut in the best way. Wrapping things up, Kevin has managed to bag Chad again. They butt heads over the serious secrecy of their relationship, but Chad agrees to go out in public, which is such great news that Kevin's stomach flu suddenly kicks in, and after asking to retire the word bro from the bedroom, he runs off to hurl. As a side note, since I moved to California, I've been involved with many dudes who broed out like Chad. I sympathize with Kevin because it can be very confusing. And finally, Kevin, Tommy, and Kitty all end up sick at Nora's. Nora admits she's like Ida, and Kevin tells her maybe that's not so bad. They have a fight. Saul and Nora have a fight over whether you have to rinse dishes before they go in the dishwasher, which I feel like happens on every TV show, and I still love it every time because it's such a real thing.
You totally do, by the way.
Yes, you absolutely do.
The
absolutely.
Fuck?
God, why is this a thing? And at the end, Robert stops by with soup. And then we see that taking care of the sick kids is the party that Nora truly wanted. The end. As the episode amply illustrates, Brothers and Sisters was trope-tastic. Rarely anything truly unpredictable happened, but it was really deft at making this family seem like an actual family. Not just the acting, but the editing, direction, and so many facets of the show's craft were in perfect sync. The weakest part of the show, from a story standpoint, I always found was the business, followed closely by memories of William, and thirdly, Tommy being such a cock that he had to be written out. Those elements are minimal to non-existent here. And while I know Joe misses Holly, let me tell you how affairs were had in my day, Harper, I still think the show was at its best when focused on the famous original Walkers, as it is here. So with that, I submit it to the panel.
Man, this was so fun to watch again. Thank you for submitting this. Excellent case. It's also really fun to be sitting around the recording table at Fort Rad with the three recappers of the show.
I know.
Television Without Pity Days. That's I did manage to track it down on Brilliant But Canceled, and this was a Couch Baron episode, which is good because I would have wanted to reread mine, and I think you only get the first page, or like the first paragraph.
Ah, that's a bummer.
Yeah. This is an interesting case for the canon. Like, I feel like we keep getting these episodes that like make us question our like canonical.
Right. We always go to the existential place. Yeah.
Because this was a, when it was at its best, it was a very good show. I don't think it was ever quite great.
Sure.
It went off the rails big time. I didn't end up finishing it. Like, I think Kitty got cancer, and
When she collapsed on the beach from her cancer at a wedding, that's what
I quit at that commercial break and never went back to it. But the first season was really fun and interesting, and they had such a good ear for the rhythms of adult siblings, and for the rhythms of adult siblings who are drunk, and just like all the different like iterations of all the siblings together and how they acted differently, like with, you know, one-on-one and all of them together.
Yep.
Nora could be tiring. She got an Emmy for this, right?
Sally Field got an Emmy for this season.
Was it this season?
Yes.
Yeah, but here she's still good, and they're still working through the William stuff. It was really enjoyable, and like, I remember really not liking Joe, but he was fine.
I thought he was fine in this episode.
Well, this is right before they get into their serious marital problems.
Right.
Right.
Worse and worse, I think, from there.
Well, yeah. And I mean, but it's hard. I would still probably watch this today, although it's so funny to see like something that was made in whatever, 2007.
Yeah.
To think of it as being a time capsule. But like literally every woman is in a wrap dress and you're like, oh, right.
Yeah.
So 2007 and that like long layered hair.
Yeah.
I think this is a really good, this is a great example of a very good show at its very best. But I'm interested to hear what other people think in terms of its canon ability in that regard.
Yeah.
Tara.
Well, Joe, you should go next because obviously you guys all know it better than Dave and I do. So yeah, Joe.
Yeah. It's interesting, Sarah, that you mentioned like the time capsuleness, because I thought that too, with Kevin's character, especially where so much of it felt sort of politically fraught, and that Rob Lowe's character, sort of fictional, fantastical, liberal Republican as he is, was so the enemy because that was the political climate at the time in terms of like gay marriage and gay rights and whatever. And that seems like such a relic now for a billion different reasons, one of which being like, as implausible as that kind of a Republican was then, it's extinct now. Like, and that gay rights have become different things since then. And the character like Kevin wouldn't be as sort of up against it now. Certainly not a sort of well-off white, like, you know, Pasadena guy like Kevin, you know? So that felt very sort of, you know, very much of its time. But I think something like Brothers and Sisters, for a show that, like, Sarah, you're right in that it was a good show that never quite achieved greatness. I don't think it had that kind of ambition. I think its ambitions were sort of more mid-level. But this, I was very sort of skeptical going back into this as to how I would revisit it, because I liked it back then, sort of warts and all. And those kind of shows tend to sometimes the warts tend to be more prominent when you revisit it.
More warty.
I don't know what the rest of I don't know if I would have would start watching the rest of the series again, how I would feel, but like this episode, it took me 5 minutes to get back into the mindset of where I was then. And like,
and I think someone would enjoy this episode knowing nothing about the show.
Yeah.
It gets you,
I think,
like
the dynamics,
the explosion to the, to grandma.
Yeah.
Like brings you up to speed.
The dynamics of all the siblings are great. The dynamics of Sally Field and Ron Rifkin as siblings is also really great. I like that the show always remembered that. John, you're entirely right. When you, as you were mentioning that I was going to miss Holly in this episode, I was writing down no Patricia Wedding because like I did miss her. She was maybe my favorite character, but this episode doesn't really need her, and that's fine. And Marion Ross is wonderful. And yeah, I think I was very happy to revisit it. And I think a show, a great episode of a good show, to me, like, that's canon worthy for me. So I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of agree with you guys that the show as a whole was slight. I did watch it, but I also bailed on it well before it was over and was disappearing up its old ass and had to rewrite people's relationships to each other in the show because they were fucking in real life. Emily Van Camp and Dave Annable. Like, it's hard to forget about that stuff. Not hard to forget about. I 100% forgot Tommy existed. Like, I had wiped him from my memory. I hated him so much. And when he was in there, I was like, oh God, what is he? Oh, he's one of the brothers. Such a bad character. Fortunately, he's not in this episode very much. And it's, you know, it does a lot of those sort of sitcom-y things well. And the, you know, light dramedy stuff. John said the moment between the sort of air clearing conversation between Ida and what's the mom's name?
Nora.
Thank you. Is a little pat, but it's, you know, it's effective. And both of those actresses obviously are like war horses of both genres. So they sell it. And this was also in the heyday of Marion Ross being everyone's mean grandma on TV.
Yep.
Around this time, she was also on Gilmore Girls and the Drew Carey Show and That 70s Show and a bunch of other shows. I just wonder if, you know, if like to Joe's point where he says a great episode of a good show, I would agree that's what this is. Certainly it excises a lot of the stuff, as we said, as John said, and you guys agree, that made the show irritating in the long run. The business stuff, the lingering William stuff and all that is not a factor here. But
all the secret children. Yeah,
all the secret children. Anyway, but I just wonder if like the show is canon worthy, if we can separate that decision, you know, as Sarah said, this is the philosophical wrangling that we have to do. So I'm not yet sure how I'm going to vote on this one. Dave.
Boy, you weren't wrong. This is trope-tastic. This is like somebody just assembled a whole bunch of tropes and just like made a story out of it. That by itself isn't so bad, but I got to tell you, people that hang out, drink wine and get drunk is like so far from entertaining for me. It is like my least favorite thing. I hate going to bars. I hate listening to people slowly get drunk. It is not fun for me. So this show is like the opposite
That's
of Dave.
What you think.
This is Krypton Dave. While I appreciate sort of what's going on.
They're all getting drunk is what they're trying to joke to you.
I see. Yeah.
We also enjoyed listening to you get drunk that one time.
Well, that's where Metaphornia comes from.
Yeah,
I remember.
Yeah. The one time I got drunk. did not like this episode or this show for that reason. For people that are into that, I think the show is absolutely perfect because it's not trying to be anything it isn't. You know, it's just hitting the notes it needs to hit and having a fun time. That's great. I'm glad you liked it. I didn't. I'm voting no. Let's put this to a vote. Sarah D. Bunting.
Just because this is one of the very few examples of TV getting sibling dynamics correct, and I'd forgotten how much I liked this show when it was good, I am voting yes.
Joe Reed.
I am also voting yes.
Dar Ariano.
Oh, I can't. I'm sorry. I got to vote no. I'm so sorry, John, to ruin your perfect record.
I knew it was going
to
be
had to bring up your perfect record, didn't
I? I know, yeah.
I admired you did. Went for That's it, though.
If I
thank
thought
you.
It was a lock, I wouldn't bother it, but...
Thank you for the submission, though. It was very... well presented.
Well argued.
That means Brothers and Sisters, Season 1, Episode 13, Something Ida This Way Comes, is not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Oh.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for winner and loser of the week. Tara has the winner.
I sure do. Did you know that Bravo has programming that is not based around Real Housewives or otherwise terrible people? It's true. I mean, terrible real people. It also has terrible scripted people. And with that in mind, it has renewed Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce. Not one, not two. It's renewed it for 3 seasons somehow.
Whoa.
That seems like a huge, huge gamble, especially for a show that I liked, but I bailed on season two. Not that I'm, you know, the bellwether for all such decisions, but I mean, good for the show, but weird. Anyway, that's my winner of the week.
Loser of the week.
Loser of the week is Louis C.K., who announced this week that the one season that we got of Horace and Pete would be its only season.
Oh,
and
no.
Kind of I have not watched Horace and Pete yet. I am interested in watching it, if only for the talent involved. I love Edie Falco. I love Ellen Alda. Like, I would like to see it. I think the more he talks about like all of his own money that he sunk into this and how he's really going to take a hit on it and whatever, I find to be a little hard to take, in that it would not have been like, he's not making the kind of show that nobody would have paid him to make. Like, there is television outlets upon television outlets at this place. Like, somebody would have paid him to make, like, FX lets him get away with so much. Like,
FX fucking made Baskets. Obviously there's nothing they won't make that he's put his name on.
Right. Right. Like, unless he's putting, like, doing like an up close, like, shot of his like asshole taking a shit. Like, it's going to show up on television somewhere. So that part is a little bit, is just like, oh, this was the only way that the show could get made, is if like Louis C.K. goes into debt. Which, first of all, like, make another movie about Dalton Trumbo and you'll be fine. You know what I mean? Like, he's getting work. Like,
just kidding.
Louis C.K. is
going to
be just, yeah, don't do that. But I'm looking forward to watching the show after all of that invective. I guess too bad that he can't make another, although again, can't, I'm going to put in scare quotes, because again, you can do whatever you're Louis C.K. People are like, you know, sucking dicks at your feet. You're fine.
Not sure of the anatomy on that one, but okay.
Well, pooping brings up an interesting question. And that is this.
I'm concerned.
Do you know what time it is?
It's poop time
to die.
It's poop time. All right, everybody, it is in fact game time. This is the 7th game time of the season, and here's what you need to know about the standings. Joe can win the season today with a victory. Will that happen? Let's find out. Today we are playing Catch the Here's Butt from listener game time participant Taylor Cole, no relation, who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. In Catch the Here's Butt, I will play you 15-second theme song clips, and you identify the show for a point. That's it. That's how easy it is. No hints. Let's throw it to Picky to see who's going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. John, Tara, Joe, Sarah, are we ready to play Catch the Here's Butt?
No, I have a question. How does one use a steel meal?
I have the same question.
I have some.
Before I correct with the right answer,
yes,
you signal your intention to use a steel meal.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
So you got to be there. Wait, I'll try to remember to pause for a microsecond.
Okay, fair enough.
All right. John, are you ready? Here's our first theme for Catch the Here's Butt. What is that backwards theme song?
That sounds to me like Gilligan's Island.
Correct.
Nice.
We have to say it backwards, do we?
No.
Island Gilligan.
Trouble. Tara.
Yeah.
I'm Ruslan.
Scrubs.
Correct.
We all end up going out and robbing a bank somewhere after this. I feel like we all know who to blame.
Taylor commented to me, and I agree, that this is either going to be the easiest game time or the hardest. It's surprising how many you can actually still figure out. All right, so this one is for Joe.
Really does sound like you're taking crazy pills. 30 Rock.
30 Rock is correct.
Especially that one because it has so many up and down rungs that it almost sounds the same backwards and forwards.
Yep. Yes.
Absolutely. All right, Sarah, here's your first.
That's The Sopranos.
You are correct. All right. Everybody's got 1 point. John, here's your second question.
Oh, Simpsons the.
Correct. Tara.
Yep. Is that Mission Impossible?
It is Mission Impossible. You are correct. Joe.
Yes.
It's upsetting.
It is.
Tootie backwards is T2. That's the facts of life.
Correct. All right, let's see if we can keep the scores going along here. No wrong answers so far. Sarah.
What's Benson? That?
Incorrect. That was, in fact,
Steel Meal. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yep.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right. How many Steel Meals do you have, Tara?
I think I forget if I did. I win the previous non-regulation.
No, one? If you don't know, you don't got them.
Okay, I have at least three.
Okay.
So now I have two.
Yeah, you have three, and I have one. I think is where we're at.
All right.
Okay.
John.
Yes. Oh man, I can kind of hear it forwards, but I can...
right.
I can play it again.
Oh God, I can't. All right, play it if you don't mind. Oh, I think I pulled it. Parks and Recreation.
Nice.
Hut the Jabba. Hut the Jabba. Hut the Jabba. Hut the Jabba. All right, it is Tara's turn.
I didn't have it until the end. It's Broad City.
You mean until the beginning?
Yes, I do mean until the beginning.
Correct. Broad City. Joe.
Yes. My God. Arrested Development.
Correct.
Wow. Ron Howard sounded fucked up.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah, here's yours.
Yep.
Speak of the devil, Andy Griffith.
Yeah. Oh my God. Wow, nice pull.
All right. Yeah. Back to John.
I don't like that.
Breakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Correct. All right. So it is Tara's turn.
Yep.
Oh.
I Love Lucy. Okay.
You are correct. It is Joe's theme. Here you go, Joe.
Oh, I'm on the cusp. Can I hear it one more time?
You certainly can.
Oh, damn. Oh, Downton Abbey.
Yep.
Oh, well done. This actually is what Fringe's theme sounds like forward.
Yeah.
It's no?
Yep.
All right, bring us into our first score break. For Sarah.
Oh, can I hear it one more time, please?
All right.
Veronica Mars?
Incorrect.
Steel Meal. Too slow?
No, you good.
Okay, that's Futurama.
Futurama is correct. All right, so let's hear Dem scores.
Hey.
Well, this Game Time score break is brought to you by Rob Hartman, whose sister Rindy tells us is celebrating a birthday this week. Did you know that in addition to composing some of our best Game Times, he's also a composer of music? Rob Hartman, he's music to our ears. All right, here's those scores. Sarah has 2. Joe and John each have 4. I have 6.
All right. And that was our 16th of 40 questions, I think. So there's still plenty of game. Here's number 17 for
Spread Eagle.
John.
Spread Eagle.
Kill all humans.
Oh, check his pants.
Oh my God.
Ew.
Is it the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
Yeah, you know it is. All right. All right, Tara.
Yeah. Peeve. That's Veep.
You are correct. That was Veep. All right, Joe, you ready?
Yep. Oh, damn.
Yeah.
One more time. Desperate Housewives?
That was from Netflix, Jessica Jones.
Oh.
Sort of where it transitions from bebop into something a little more dark and serious. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Sarah, here is your theme.
No idea.
Would you like to hear that again, Sarah? Because I would.
No.
Oh, okay.
Never. I don't know who it is.
All right. That stuff at the end, which is the beginning, are bats. That's Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?
Oh, of course.
That's what bats in reverse sound like. Yep.
Wow.
All right, John Ramos, here is your theme.
Oh my God, my soul hurts. I don't know.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Oh, well, sorry, Adam.
All right, Tara Ariano.
Yes. Shouldn't that be seven times as long? That's Orange is the New Black.
That's what you did there. Joseph Reed.
Yep.
Oh, I got it. It's Transparent.
It is Transparent.
Nice.
Nicely
done. To Sarah.
Thank God. This monotonous tone themes really do show up well.
Oh my God.
I'm a little sad that we don't get Tara singing.
Men, guys, mad. They're so.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't even know if you answered it, but obviously it's Mad Men. All right, so we're back to John. What's that, John?
I don't know.
Anybody? No.
Steel Meal. I'll use my last one.
All right.
Louis.
Correct. It was Louis.
Out of steel.
That guy.
All right. We're on to Tara.
Got real farty at the end / beginning. The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah, correct. All right, Joe, here's yours. Yep.
Oh.
Thank you, background notes, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, speaking of farty, Alias.
You are correct, bringing us into our second score break for Sarah.
Cheers.
Yep. You are correct.
Or Screech.
Was Cheers. All right. Score break.
This Game Time score break is brought to you by Rob Hartman, whose sister Rindy tells us is celebrating a birthday this week. Rob Hartman's talents know no bounds. He's a game maker and a musical theater professional. Anything you can do, I can do better is both a show tune and something that could legitimately be said by birthday boy Rob Hartman.
All right, let's hear the scores.
Scores are Sarah has 4, John has 5, Joe has 6, I have 10.
All right, this is question 29 and is going out to John.
I kind of like this one.
And this one I know is in there somewhere.
It feels friendlier than the other ones. That's not to say it's friends. I'm just saying audio-wise.
Barty Miller?
That was. Anybody? Everybody Frasier? Loves Raymond.
Everybody loves Raymond.
Oh. Yeah. Tara?
Not everybody.
Wow. Oh, man.
Damn you, Picky.
Picky smiled.
No more comprehensible forward than backward. That is justified.
It is justified. You are correct. And this is to Joe.
Sounds so much more polka-y backwards. The Office.
Correct.
Nice.
And now to Sarah.
Oh, shit.
Jeez.
It's like a kind of torture to have to play the game. That's the Muppets. Muppet Show,
the
whatever.
Muppet Show, correct. All right, so we're back to John. This is your second to last question, John.
That's exhausting. Oh, I think he does smile. Ew. That's really gross. Excuse yourself, John.
Someone kill that bass guitar. Please.
Seinfeld with shards.
Sharpfeld.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Come on.
That's Law and Order.
Which one?
Original.
Yeah. All right.
The one I hear 800 times a week. Thank you, all of syndication.
Joe.
Oh, my God.
All right, who's doing the dance? I know I am.
Yep.
Bonanza.
Last year there were 3.
What's correct. The matter? Don't like Bonanza?
All right. Sorry, Sarah.
I'll be killed if I don't get this right, right?
Maybe.
Okay, sweet. It's the A-Team.
It is the A-Team. Correct. All right, here's...
I won't say what I thought it was in case it's the next one in the game. Yes.
Save it for group.
I am.
John, your last theme is as follows.
Wow.
Oh, Buffy.
Correct. Tara, your last theme.
Yep.
Yes.
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones is correct.
Now without farts.
Joe. Well, I added a fart.
Joe's last theme.
Shit. I need to hear it one more time.
Okay.
Oh man, it is on the edge of my brain.
It sounds like 30 Rock.
It does.
Yeah.
No. It's
Yeah. It's
Sex and the City.
There we go.
I'm offering you the pressure and buzz.
Oh, Sarah.
Okay, last theme for Sarah.
Friday Night Lights?
Yeah, you are correct. All right, it is time to hear them scores.
This final Game Time score break is brought to you by Rob Hartman, whose sister Rindy tells us is celebrating a birthday this week. As far as we can tell, Rob Hartman is not English, but that hasn't stopped him from currently teaching musical theater at Mount View Academy of Theater Arts in London. Rob Hartman, he's taken us from crayons to perfume. What can we give him in return? Warmest birthday greetings! Happy birthday, Rob Hartman!
And the real scores, please.
All right. Sarah and John are tied with 7 each. Joe has 9. And I, thanks to my fully squandered steel meals, all eaten, I have 13.
All right. So Tara wins, but we do have this tiebreaker, and it would be shame to waste it. So for shits and giggles... And 7 Dave points.
Whoa.
Here is your backwards theme. First person to shout out the correct answer gets it. Anybody know what that is?
Is it Happy Days?
It is Happy Days.
Oh, I don't
said that.
Oh, they did?
Oh, okay.
We didn't hear you. I whoever said that, let us
know. All right.
Who said it?
Joe did.
All right, Joe, okay. You get 7 day points, 1 for every day of the week mentioned in the Happy Days theme. Nice.
Love it.
Congratulations, Tara.
Tara.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We broke down the second season of Kimmy Schmidt before Liv broke down the last episode of Face Off this season, and the blotter presented a deadly game time before we went around the dial with stops at Confirmation, iZombie, The Outs, 60 Days In, and Quaker Oatmeal. It's going to make a hot cereal lover out of you.
No.
Oh.
We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's backwards theme song quiz, which extends our Game Time season at least one episode. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Pizza Potter 41,
Sarah D. Bunting,
Peasant Girl told me there was no alcohol,
Joe Reed,
Red Lillian,
John Ramos.
Hey, baby.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Bunny and Kitty being best friends. Together forever, the fun never ends. Solving mysteries one hug at a time. Bunny and Kitty, two of a kind.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.